Well, good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you in the house of the Lord today. Our pastor's finishing his vacation, and we'll be back next week, and we look forward to that. But so today I have the privilege of being able to share from the Word this morning. I'm excited about that. Glad you're here. So we're going to be in Matthew chapter 9. If you want to go ahead and kind of make your way there, we're going to focus in on verses 36 to 38, but we will be kind of looking at other parts of the entirety of chapter 9 throughout the course of the sermon this morning. So the title of today's message is The Visual Acuity of Faith, which is a fancy way of describing visual acuity is basically saying the clarity of your vision. Anyone in here with corrective lenses, whether that be glasses or contacts, understands this. I wear contacts, and so when I am not wearing my contacts, I am the opposite of visual acuity. If I did not have my contacts in right now, I would definitely not be able to recognize Mr. Terry up here in the front row. I might not even recognize there's a table up here. So when I put my corrective lenses in, I can see clearly. So you can feel good about the fact that I'm behind the wheel. I can see clearly when I have the corrective lenses. So the idea is not just our physical eyes having clarity or clear vision, but that we are talking about our spiritual vision this morning. Talking about how do we see the world? In other words, do we have eyes like Jesus? So I'm going to read, it sounds like most of you have gotten here to Matthew chapter 9. Let's read 36 through 38 and we'll get rolling this morning. So verse 36, when Jesus saw the crowds, he felt compassion for them because they were weary and worn out like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, the harvest is abundant, but the workers are few. Therefore, pray to the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest. What I want us to think about is this idea of Jesus saw the crowds. So when I think about like seeing and vision, I'm astounded by just the miracle of our eyes that God has given us. They say that just for vision, during the course of the day, 50% of our brain power is dedicated to processing just what we're seeing with our eyes. I love things like optical illusions and various things like that, which we'll actually kind of go into a little bit later in the lesson today. Just because our eyes do so many things. It's like, I think it was like 2 million cells in the eyes. I mean, it's just remarkable, all the care given to our eyes. Our eyelashes, which the number of eyelashes that fall out during our lifetime, if you put end to end, which those would be very small, would go like 98 feet. That's crazy. I didn't even know we were losing that many. I thought it was kind of like teeth, like you only had so many, but we're getting more. It's like an eyelash lives for like 5 months or something like that. But it's to protect from dirt and things getting in to our eyes. The eyes are amazing things. I remember growing up in Birmingham, my parents got the Sunday paper. Y'all remember getting the Sunday paper? Yes, kids, there were people that would throw paper at your house and you'd get it and read it. But the thing I loved about Sunday paper, not the coupons, the comics section. It was in color. Calvin and Hobbes didn't just get 3 frames. They got like half a page. I used to love reading the comics. And then one day, it's like a life-changing moment. I opened up the comics and there was something new. It was a magic eye picture. Some of you saw them on the monitors out in the lobby. You may have been wondering why people were getting so close and trying to figure it out. We've got a picture of one, in case you missed that, of a stereograph or a magic eye picture. If you're not familiar with these, you would look at it. People have different strategies, I guess. Some people try to cross their eyes and then slowly uncross it. I personally will just get really close to it and try to stare through one point of the picture until all of a sudden a 3D image emerges. Now, you can't do it from where you're sitting. You would have like superpowers, but that's why we have them out in the lobby if you want to try it out after the service. But I remember trying to do that. And that first image, I mean, I'm sure my parents thought I had lost it. One of many days, I'm sure, that they thought I'd lost it. But I'm in our living room, you know, putting this paper and doing this and just throwing it down. But I've got to figure it out. And like coming back to just this wrestling war. And all of a sudden, I remember when it popped out at me. If you've ever done it, it's like a magical moment when all of a sudden, I remember it was a train engine just popped out and I was hooked. Like if I ever see those, I have to know what the hidden picture is. So what I want to do this morning through this text of Matthew chapter 9 is I want us to kind of address maybe a question, a thought. See, many of us wonder and maybe aren't clear on, as a believer in Jesus, what am I supposed to be doing every day? Like, I kind of know what to do on Sundays. I come to a house of worship. I sing songs of praise. I hear a message. And I kind of know that I'm supposed to be praying and reading the Bible. But, like, what am I supposed to be doing? See, a lot of people have a hard time seeing that 3D image of what I do Monday, Thursday, whatever day it is, because they think if I'm not the one giving the message or if I'm not the one singing, then what do I do? And so I want us to kind of think through, having eyes like Jesus, what does that look like? So there's going to be three things we're going to look at. Number one, if we're going to have eyes like Jesus, we need to be observant. See, I want you to notice in verse 36 that Jesus saw the crowds. We're going to unpack that here in a moment, but I do want to give you a little test of your observational skills. I've got a little video. The video will give you the instructions, but just so you're ready, I want to give you the instructions also. So there's going to be three guys in white t-shirts passing a basketball. They're going to be kind of moving around. There's going to be some guys in black t-shirts. Your goal is to count how many times the guys in the white t-shirt pass the basketball. All right, simple enough. Let's see how you do.
This is a test of selective attention. Count how many times the players wearing white pass the basketball. How many passes did you count? The correct answer is 15 passes. But did you see the gorilla?
All right, so let's see how you did. Let's just start with the simple, the surface part of the test. How many of you got correct the number of passes by the guys in white? All right. Remember, we are in church. How many of you saw the gorilla the first time around? Very good. All right. How many of you did not see the gorilla? All right, just about equal. It's about a 50-50. Full disclosure, I did not see the gorilla the first time I was shown this video either. But here's the deal. We have got to be observant because, just like in this video, we are focusing maybe on the guys in white passing the basketball. And in this illustration, we might be focusing on the wrong things and miss the gorilla that God has put right in front of us. That's going to sound like a fairly harsh analogy, but you understand what I mean when we get a little bit further, because the gorilla in our life is the fact, the truth in your outline, that God is putting people in our path every day. I'm not saying those people are gorillas, but you get what I'm saying. Like sometimes we're focused on just surviving the day and we miss that God has put someone in our path. We may be focused on things that are not evil necessarily, but we just don't have our spiritual lenses in to see that God is putting people in our path. So let's go back to chapter 9. I want you to see two times where Jesus saw people. Look with me at chapter 9, verse 9. Jesus is traveling. As Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax office. And he said to him, "Follow me." So he got up and followed him. Then jump down with me to verse 20. Again, Jesus is traveling. Just then, a woman who had suffered from bleeding for 12 years approached from behind, touched the tassel on his robe. For she said to herself, "If I can just touch his robe, I'll be made well." But Jesus turned and saw her. "Have courage, daughter. Your faith has made you well." See, Jesus had somewhere to be. He was traveling from point A to point B. He was doing good things. He was trying to proclaim the kingdom of heaven, fulfill his mission, traveling from one town to the next. And in the first passage that we looked at, he looks at the tax office and sees Matthew. He says, "Come, follow me." If you're a student of the Bible, you may already know this, but others you may not if you're newer to all of this. In the New Testament, Jewish people did not look at people in the tax office with much love. In fact, there was a lot of distrust and angst and maybe prejudice against those in the tax office. Why? Because Rome said to these guys, "You tax the people, and this is the amount we need. Anything you tax over that, you get to keep." So you can see how that could be quickly abused. And the people did not care for it. So when most people went by the tax office, they were not looking to make eye contact with any of the tax officials. And yet Jesus, going from one point to another, looks up, notices a guy named Matthew, sees him, and makes a connection. In the second story, he is actually somewhat in a hurry. An official has come to him and said, "My daughter is dying. Please, Jesus, I know that you can help." Jesus is on the way to that event. In the middle of that, the crowds are pressing in. You've been in those scenarios where you're just crowded with people after a football game, at Black Friday at Walmart, whatever it is, where you just feel the crowd, and all of a sudden, someone touches the hem of his robe. Other gospels give us the detail that he felt power leave him, even from the tassel of his robe, but this passage indicates that when he felt that, he turned and he saw her. Now remember, Jewish people were very much about clean and unclean, and this woman would have been an outcast, moved out from society because she was suffering from this 12-year affliction of bleeding, and yet Jesus turned and looked at her, not with disdain, not with disgust, but to say, "Have courage. Your faith has made you well." See, Jesus was moving from point A to point B with admirable things to do. He would eventually raise that girl from the dead, and he would eventually go and speak truth at the town that he was coming to, but he was not so busy that he did not see people. You may have heard it, the term divine appointment. It's this idea that God is putting people in our path. Some of us have long-standing divine appointments, and they are a coworker, a neighbor, a family member, and we have neglected to see them. Others are divine appointments with strangers. You might be at Walmart and, I don't know, you're bonding over the detergent you might use. Like, "Oh, you like Tide? I like Tide." And all of a sudden, a conversation builds up, right? And it's like, "I don't know anything about them, but we use the same detergent, so I feel good about that." Like, and all of a sudden, like, after you've had that connection, don't you see them at, like, other random places? I mean, we're not so big of a town that you can't run back into the same people, and God may have been putting them on your path. I mean, think about these connections. I know that I am alone in this, but I know that you all have your own football team. But when an Auburn Tiger sees someone else wearing Auburn paraphernalia, we yell at one another. We may not know you. We may be in an airport. We may be anywhere, a grocery store, and we're going to yell, "War Eagle," which I admit is somewhat frightening to hear people yelling "war" anything out in public, right? But like, that's how we identify. We connect over these little things. You've got your own sayings and, you know, whatever you do for your school, right? Like, we connect. But we've got to be observant to the fact that God is putting people in our path. The second thing that we must do if we're going to have eyes like Jesus is not only be observant, but we must be compassionate. Must be compassionate. In verse 36, it says, when Jesus saw the crowd. He was moved with compassion because they were weary and worn out, just doing their own thing because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he was compassionate. For some of us, if you're like me, be compassionate probably needs to have a sub footnote that says, learn to be compassionate. Like some of you, that's not a problem. If you're like my wife, Jennifer, who has the gift of mercy, she can meet someone and they'll be weeping together and sharing Kleenex very quickly because she has a merciful heart. I would walk by the same situation and my natural inclination is to be like, rub some dirt on it. You know, whatever, like just move on, right? But the reality is that we must have compassion for people. In a moment, I'm going to look at a passage where two groups of people are looking at the same situation, one group with compassion, the other with judgment. And so to illustrate this, I mentioned that I like optical illusions. So we're going to kind of look at some optical illusions where you can see two pictures in the same thing or just other things that our eyes can do. So let's look at this first one. So in this, the optical illusion, what I'm guessing most of you are seeing is spiraling circles, kind of connecting. But the reality is these are four perfect circles that do not touch one another. So you can see that in the middle one. But then after that, if just with your eye, it looks like they're all getting tangled. But let's look at the third one and just trace it. It never touches another circle. But our eyes are playing tricks on us to where it looks like they're all converging. How about this second one? There are two images you can see in this one picture. How many of you can see a face? All right. How many of you can see a word? All right. Just so nobody's like having a panic attack, let me show you. The word, L-I-A-R. Kind of got to tilt your head sideways, liar. And then the face, here's the eyes, the nose, and the mouth, and the chin. Two pictures in one. Let's look at another one. I love these things. This one, my eyes just keep going back and forth. The guy looks like he's looking at me from the front and the profile. The key is the ear. It's just weirding me out when I look at it. It's like, he's looking at me. He's looking this way. He's looking this way. I mean, it's just like, okay, dude, make up your mind, right? So that's one. Let's look at another one. All right, this is a classic. This is like one of the very beginning. There are two women in this picture. How many of you can see an older woman? How many of you see a young woman? All right. Very good. So just so you can see it, the older woman, this is her nose, her mouth, and she's kind of wearing a veil and her hair is covering her eyes. All right, the younger woman is looking away from us. This is her nose. This is her chin. That's kind of a necklace. And she's wearing a veil with a little feather on the front so that she's looking back into the distance. It's two women, one picture. All right, this next one, you're going to look at some crosshairs. And what you're going to do is just focus on the crosshairs. It's a little bit difficult from a distance. Some of you will be able to do it. To some level, but the dots will look like they are disappearing the longer you stare at the crosshairs. This is not computer gimmickry. They are there the whole time. But when you stare at it long enough, it looks like some of the circles disappear. Is anybody able to do that? You're seeing at least a couple of them disappear? Yeah. Some of you need to go home and just like 20 best optical illusions and get closer. Last one, you're going to stare at a dot for about 20 seconds. That dot right there, and then a black and white photo is going to come up, and your eyes are going to fill in the color for just a few seconds. It's getting close. Here we go. Did you see the color? How many of you could see color on it when it first flashed to the black and white, right? See, here's the deal. There are two ways of looking at every situation, but the reality is our eyes can be deceived. That's a black and white photo. There's no color in it, and yet our eyes made us believe. Those are four perfect circles, and our eyes deceived us to think that they were actually connecting. So this is what I want us to do. Let's look back at Matthew chapter 9, when Matthew had just been called, in verse 10. Here's a scenario where two groups of people are seeing something, but they're seeing it totally different. Verse 10 says, "While Jesus was reclining at the table in the house, many tax collectors and sinners came as guests to eat with Jesus and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, 'Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?' But when he heard this, Jesus said, 'Those who are well don't need a doctor. The sick do. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I didn't come to call the righteous, but sinners.'" See, there were two groups looking at this dinner party: Jesus and the Pharisees. They were interpreting it differently. On the one hand, Jesus saw Matthew and his friends as people who were in need of a physician. The Pharisees looked at the same scenario and passed judgment and said, "Why are you hanging out with those people?" See, that is a lack of compassion. See, we've got to learn something. The truth in your outline is people, those who are far from God, act like those who are far from God. We've got to understand that. Not a single person in this room, myself included, was so good and healthy and put together that Jesus looked at me and said, "You know what? You don't even need the blood of the cross. Just come on in." Not a one of us was so good. Whether it's right, wrong, or whatever, there's at least enough truth that some of us have invited people to church and they've said something to the effect of, "I couldn't go in there, the walls would fall down the second I walked in there." Have you heard something like that before? What they are indicating is, my life's not cleaned up enough to go hang out with the people who are cleaned up enough. And that's on us that we keep trying to portray that we're cleaned up enough. That's Pharisaical. See, Jesus looked at these individuals with compassion. He recognized they're going to act like those who are far from God. Paul understood this in his writings, in his letters. He would say things like, "Remember, church, don't get hung up in this sin, this sin, this sin." Then he would say something like many of you have done, or you came from, reminding us that we always were not healthy. We at one time were sick, needing the touch of the great physician. Let me illustrate it. A couple of years ago, we were doing a Disciple Now weekend at my church in Mississippi. And there was a young lady who had been in juvenile detention, and a couple of our adults had been doing some ministry at that juvenile detention center. So when she got released, she started coming to our church. And this event was coming up. And she came up to me and said, "Look, I've been looking at the brochure, the information. I feel like I need to go, but I noticed that it says that you can't smoke during this event, and I can't go 3 days without smoking, so I don't think I'm going to be able to go." So I began to think, you know what, this is someone who is far from God, who has habits that are far from God, and she's wanting to come close. Why should this be a barrier? So I called the host home where she would be staying, and I said, "Look, this is a little out there, but this individual, you've met her. This is where we're at. Would you be willing to designate a place in your backyard where if she needed to, she could smoke?" That host home was willing to do that. So I called the young lady back and said, "Look, I want you to do your best to go without smoking this week. But if you just need to, there's a place designated where you can do that." The thing that I did not think all the way through, I thought about the house. I didn't think about the church building. So she went in and registered, got her D-Now t-shirt, so she's obviously a part of the weekend, stood outside of the main doors where all the other families were coming in, and was smoking. So I had a countless number of parents come up to me and say, "Hey, did you know there's a student out there smoking?" To which I replied, "Yes, I meant to tell her to do it out back." Right? You can imagine kind of that scenario, right? Now, what I'm not saying is next year's D-Now, we're going to be passing out cigarettes. And that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is this, is that people far from God act like those who are far from God. They have not begun the sanctifying, transformative work that you and I who are believers in Christ this morning have begun. And so why raise a barrier when they want to come close to God? So let us be people of compassion. Jesus looked at this crowd and it said he was moved to compassion. I want you to know here today, wherever you are in your life right now, Jesus sees you and he sees you with compassion. You may feel like nobody notices you. Jesus notices. He's invested in you. And so we, his people, if we're going to have eyes like Jesus, we must see people, be observant, we must be compassionate, and thirdly, we must be willing. We must be willing. Look back with me at verses 36 through 38. He saw the crowds. He felt compassion because of the state they were in. They were weary. They had no shepherd, so they're wandering. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is abundant, but workers are few. Therefore, pray to the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into the harvest." See, I just can picture this. Jesus is getting ready to minister to this crowd, and he just stands up, and he sees a sea of faces, and he's compassionate, and he recognizes, I'm doing my part, but I need help. There are so many people. So he says, boys, disciples, and they just look over the crowd. You see this harvest? There's so few workers. I need you guys. I need you to go and recruit and to pray to the Lord that he'll raise up more workers for this harvest. That is still applicable to us today in this room. There's a saying in church leadership, and it's fairly true. 80% of the work gets done by 20% of the people. 80% of the work of the church is being done by 20% of the people. I want you to clearly understand that is not a biblical model. See, the biblical model is that we are all members of the body, all working in unison under the headship of Christ, who is the head of the body. So how do we increase the laborers in the harvest? We got to be willing. Let's think about it this way. Earlier, we were led in some amazing music by our worship band. Every week, I mean, they put work into it. They are learning the songs. They're coming up here on Tuesdays and practicing. They're getting here early and making sure everything's together. And they practice. They're all in one so that we can be able to sing worship to our God. So here's the truth in the outline. We must do our part, but we must be part of the group. We must do our part, but we must be part of the group. So the praise band, if they get up here and the drummer decides, you know what, I'm going to sit in the stool, I'm going to sit in that cage, but I'm not playing today. He's not doing his part, we lose out. I'm no musician, but percussion is important to keep everybody on beat, right? If he decides I'm out, what if one of the guitar players, the lead guitar, says, you know what, this song, y'all are on your own. I'm not doing my part. Then we're all singing kind of a weird a cappella with the drums and the bass alone, right? And it's just kind of like, what's going on? See, we've got to do our part, but we must be part of the group. So, same scenario. What if the bass player decides, I know what the song is, and it's kind of a slow one, but it's time for my time to shine. I'm going to do a little bass. And he's just like, bing, you know, ba-da-da-da-da. And we're all, it's like disjointed to the ear. Like, that is that what the group's supposed to be sounding like? I mean, what if one of the vocalists, they're playing Amazing Grace, and they're like, you know what this would be a great time for? Freebird. And all of a sudden, we're like, okay, I'm trying to follow with this. And the guys in the back are like, where do we get that? You know, those lyrics so people can sing along. Like, it doesn't work. But when they all are doing their part as part of doing the same song, we are edified. In the same way, you and I must do our part of going into the harvest, but we've got to be part of the group of people going into the harvest. We can't just go do, you know, what we think is important, because Jesus has clarified it's the harvest. That's what you need to be doing. And we can't sit on our hands because we've got to do our part. It really just comes down to, are we willing to be part? I mean, that's really what it comes down to. So if we're going to have eyes like Jesus, we've got to be observant. We've got to see the people he's putting in our path. We've got to be compassionate and just recognize not everyone has been transformed by the power of Jesus yet, and therefore we don't need to hold them to that same standard until they have been transformed. And thirdly, we've got to be willing to do our part. So in closing, there's this app that has gone over the globe, right? Pokemon Go. Whether you're playing it, you've probably heard of it at this point. The idea is this, that there is an unseen world of Pokemon that if you don't have the app, you're oblivious to. See, I didn't realize this until some guys in the tech department told me that we are actually right now at a Pokemon gym, G-Y-M. You can trade and battle people or whatever you do. Like, this is like a hot spot right here on the hill. So, you know, who knows? You may, in the middle of the night, be driving by and see people out here trying to catch Pokemon or battle each other, right? Like right now, who knows? If I had my phone and I was looking through the app and I'm just scanning and all of a sudden I look over here and there's Carly Perkins. I'm like, dude, there's a Pikachu right on your shoulder. Y'all would be like, he has lost it, right? I mean, like, because you're not looking through the same lens that I'm looking. I mean, these guys, and some of you may be in this camp, the Pokemon Go is, I mean, they're rabid about this. Like, just this week, there was a scuffle in a park in Minnesota because there were some veterans at a veterans park trying to honor veterans. That is until Pokemon Go crew shows up, and it literally got into a scuffle where they're like, we're trying to honor veterans, we're trying to catch Pokemon, and it's just like, boom. There's people getting arrested, crossing into private property because there's like water, you know, there's like special ones around water and stuff like this. They are vigilant to find these unseen things. Look, Pokemon Go, like everything, at some point will be a fad that will dwindle down. But right now, they are all about finding those Pokemon. At the same moment, why is the church not eagerly and just as adamantly searching for those of the harvest? Joel, if you'll come, and we're going to have a time of invitation. Look, we've got to be willing. We've got to be compassionate. And we've got to train ourselves to see where God is working in our midst. So as we move into this time of response, there's a couple ways you can respond, however the Spirit has led you, but maybe you just want to come and pray, or maybe at your seat, just, Lord, help me to see people. I don't want to miss when it's so obvious that you're putting someone in my path. Maybe it's, Lord, help me to learn compassion. There's some people in my life that maybe I've not said it out loud, but in my mind I have passed judgment. But really, they're just far from God. Help me to introduce them to the physician. Maybe you need to just come and commit, I want to be willing to be part of the harvest. Maybe, I didn't get to this part of the story, but there's two guys who are blind, and they came to Jesus right before he sees the crowds and has compassion. And with this this vision or the sight metaphor, he gives them sight so that they can see. And maybe today you've got spiritual blindness. You've never accepted Jesus, what the work that he's done on the cross on your behalf, the fact that he's raised from the grave to defeat sin and death. And today you need spiritual sight to be saved, to be healed, to be called a son or daughter of the King. I want you to have that opportunity. So I'm going to pray. They're going to sing. Why don't you go ahead and stand with me, and we'll have a time of response.